Hi, my name is Phil Metzger, and in 1992, I moved to Moscow, Russia. From there, I lived in the beautiful Central European country of Hungary, where my family and I spent the next 20 years living, learning, and sharing about Jesus. Different foods, culture, and language, but underneath it all, we discovered the most amazing people. We learned that to share the gospel effectively, we had to adjust. We had to cross cultures. Now we're back in the U.S., and we're discovering that this country is a melting pot of culture. This show is committed to helping Christians connect to those who think, believe, and live differently than them. This is Crossing Cultures.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining us for the Crossing Cultures podcast. Before this whole podcast even began, Nick and I sat down at our church and had a conversation on race and the gospel. Now, looking back, we realized this would be a great show for us to add to our podcast. And so enjoy this episode called In God We Trust. Well, thanks for being here. And I want to introduce my guest. Many of you already know Nick, but if you don't, I'm going to introduce Nick, share a few thoughts, and then turn it over to him. And we're going to have a conversation. It's going to be good. So Nick has been, I'm just going to give the real highlights. You ready? 5 kids. Yes. 5 kids, and then, and I was about to get to the prize of them all, his amazing wife, Anna Marie. She's in the back with the youngest, the newest. She's the champion of the home. Yep. And his, Nick and Anna Marie have been serving actually in our preschool area for, I don't know.
Well, a few months.
Yeah.
A few months.
Pre-pandemic, you
right,
know.
Yeah.
And Nick played in the NFL for eight years, yeah. And just an amazing, we love this family so much. They've become a real, just wonderful part of here. And he's a really good barbecuer. We got to call that out too. Yeah. I'm just hitting all the things that really matter, you know. Amazing kids, amazing wife, and he can barbecue beyond that. And he's a servant. And so I'm really glad that we get to sit down. We were talking about this, and we wanted to do, we called it In God We Trust. And then a conversation on race and the gospel. And we've been reading, and then I'm going to turn this over to Nick, but we've been looking in on our Sunday mornings. We've been looking in the book of 1 Corinthians. And I just want to reread these verses because it's been a couple months since we read them. But if they're, holy mama, they're so appropriate right now. Holy mama. That doesn't mean anything, but anyways, yeah. So listen to this. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 19. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. To the Jew, I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews. To those under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak, I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And I do this for the gospel's sake, that I also might be a partaker with you. I really feel like in this season that God's put all of us in, and this is starting a few months ago, these are our theme verses. That we as God's people who are ambassadors of Jesus Christ on this planet, that we would esteem others above ourselves so that we could win them to Jesus Christ. Because no matter what else happens in this world, in this lifetime, we're here to help people know Jesus. Amen? And so our world's hurting right now, and it's so important to have gospel conversations on real life issues. And so I'm going to turn it over to you, Nick, to just kind of take us there. And
fix all the problems.
Yeah. So if you could fix everything in the next 20 minutes, it'd be awesome.
Got it. So, but seriously, thanks, Phil, and, you know, because I think that this last week and a half has been really interesting for me. This is the first time in my whole black life of being reached out to consistently for either apologies, condolences, hey, can you be a part of this conversation? So I guess what that tells me and all that I'm feeling and all that I'm hearing is that this is a moment. This is a moment. You know, this is not like a passing thing. This is something that wherever you are in life and wherever you sit in your faith or wherever you sit in trying to figure your own life out, this is a moment that will be something you'll look back on your life and you will be able to look at what you participated in, what you missed, what you got to see. This will be a memorable thing for all of us. And so I think my goal here is just, you know, when I sat a few weeks ago, or no, it hasn't even been a few weeks, when the whole string of incidences took place. After George Floyd's death, I remember sitting there and having conversations with friends and just being like, you know, the hardest part of it is having no idea where to start on how to just make it better. I mean, regardless of his color, regardless of any, you see an innocent person get murdered and you see it happen consistently and you're just like, yo, you know, there has to be something that I can do if I'm professing this Holy Spirit filled faith that I can be a part of this to make it not that way, you know? So, you know, as the days go by, I end up downloading some thoughts just with friends in conversation, and really the last week for me has been a cycle of these same three ideas. And they're all really interconnected, and I think they're all really basic, but super, super profound and deep in a lifetime of work. The first thing I think is just to acknowledge that this is a moment, and I mean specifically to the racial conversation for the sides, unfortunately saying sides, just the privileged group and the non-privileged group, whatever they may look like. The first thing that comes to my mind is a concern for maybe the people in a group like myself in an underprivileged group based on our appearance. If we're gonna be ready for after years of, say, injustice, years of oppression, years of unfairness, to once now people are actually starting to listen if we are going to have something productive and usable to say for ourselves. Because we all know we've been in situations where you've been so angry for so long, when the other person lets you talk, you just keep yelling. That doesn't actually help the new future. And so I think about my people and I'm hopeful that the right people would be put in the right place at the right time to speak well for the type of future that we envision for ourselves. Because even just biblically, you think about Israel, 400 years of slavery, and how long before they were asking to go back? Mm-hmm. You know, it was just like, there's a newfound responsibility that comes with opportunity that an underprivileged group may not have access to understanding. You know, so I think our situation was a little unique because, like Phil said, I played in the league for a long time, and just by default, you know, if you don't buy a car every week, you're going to have a lot of money at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? So being in a group in society that does get privileges just because of having a certain amount of money, you realize, you know, like when I grew up in a pretty stereotypically bad neighborhood with guns, you know, drug activity, prostitutes, and just what you see on TV when they make a bad neighborhood, what it looks like, that's what my neighborhood looked like in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And if you ask 9 out of 10 people in those situations what would make their life better, they're just going to say money. But how many of you guys know people with a lot of money and a whole lot of problems still? You see what I mean? So I don't want the people in the underprivileged group to think that once they get a chance to speak for themselves, everything will be fixed. There's still going to be a whole new skill set that comes with having access that's going to have to be acquired over time to make the change sustainable and productive for the following generations. You guys follow? That's one thing I think about. I think on the other side of this moment, the privileged group that's you know, almost passing the baton, if you will. It's almost like when I was playing in the league, I replaced, not replaced because he was not good anymore, but if you guys remember Brian Urlacher, I was his backup. He's a Hall of Fame player. And so there was this time period when he was going to be retiring soon and I was still playing a lot, where he was having to teach me his job so that I could carry it on and do what I needed to do. And so there's that little bit of this tension where, you know, they talk about in psychology, when you see a privileged group have the playing field actually leveled, they feel a sense of injustice because something's being taken from them, it's loss. Even though things are being equalized, there's the real sense and that exposure to the feeling of injustice. And so I'm wondering, you know, all these text messages that I'm getting from people on the privileged side, they're like, I want to do anything I can to help, if there's the awareness that there's going to be a pain associated with that service, a real pain and a real sense of maybe that something's happening to you that you don't like and that is not right. So just dealing with the emotional stress of that transition, I think is something real. But at the end of the day, I think the hope lies in the last two parts, which is, you know, this idea that there's no systematic transformation without individual transformation, because the systems only reveal the desires of the people. You know, we make structures and frameworks to support what we want to happen. And so the system is messed up, but that's only a roundabout way of saying we are messed up. You know, but the good thing is that we have in our faith a built-in plan for that. And that's our faith in Jesus, because his whole plan for our lives is not to just love us and have us go be in heaven with him later after we die. He wants to immediately transform us into what he saw in us when he created us. You know, he wants to immediately get to work on that. And the cool thing about that is that the things that he wants to create us into for our lives to feel like we're living to the fullest are immediately and directly attached to the needs of other people. You see what I mean? So the way that we create systems when we're people is like, I was telling Phil a minute ago, we have a tendency to create systems that, you know, for my life to go the way I want it to, it's gonna have to cost you something, or you're gonna have to do without something for me to have all the things I think I need. It's evident specifically in this conversation. I was just talking to a friend earlier this week. She's a white woman from South Georgia, and she went to UGA. And in college, her freshman year, she noticed that like a bunch of people were getting flack and backlash for putting Confederate flags in their dorm room windows. And, you know, she didn't really have an opinion on either side, but she just felt like people should be able to put up the flag because that's their Southern pride, you know, symbol. There's nothing racist about it or inherently wrong. So she felt so strongly, she went to go and write this, almost like an editorial piece for the school paper. And the UGA Journalism School, if you guys don't know, is like, that's where the Peabody Award comes from, the journalism big prize. So this is a big deal. She took on this whole thing, this research on like, is the Confederate flag a big deal? Because in the Georgia state flag is actually a small Confederate flag like pieced into it. And so she's, you know, going into this project thinking it's gonna be this Georgia pride statement. And she realizes that the Confederate flag entered the Georgia flag when the delegates were about to meet from the North and the South to prepare to start having talks about the Constitution. And it says that she's showing me like textbook references where the Southern delegates wouldn't even come to the table if slavery was gonna be negotiable. They 100% would not talk about unifying the country unless they could keep hands off of slavery being a thing. That was a system that we started, before we even wrote up We the People in anything, they're just like, well, first of all, we have slavery. We're keeping that, what's next? And so I say that just to say that when we're left to our own devices to make up systems, it's in God we trust, but it's ... to help me with what I want to have happen. Do you know what I mean? It's not really trusting his plan, and that's just all of our defaults. And so I think that just at this moment, it's so critical to understand that whether we have been active participants or not, we have lived just in how it is. And so we do have to start from the ground up, which is belief systems of individuals to make any progress. But that, again, that's the good news, because we can only control our own mess anyway. Why I think that's important, something that I was just alluding to, the third idea is that as believers specifically, we're so much more interconnected than I think we give credit to or we give power to. We have such a great responsibility to, you know, the way that your walk with Christ ends up has a lot to do with my walk. For example, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for two or three men in my life that really took God seriously at an early age, that our paths just so happened to intersect at that right moment. And certainly God can work around any of our mistakes, but to make God have to work around the things that we negate or the things that we choose not to do, you know, that may be a part of some of the undue suffering that we see, I believe. And so I think the way to think about it for me is, you know, I played on teams for a long time. And so teamwork, you know, something we talk about in our house all the time. And teamwork, I think, is great and it's powerful, but it's not quite the same as being one body. I think that there's a really important distinction, because you know this better than I do. You know, there's this idea that as churches, maybe different denominations or even different Calvaries around the world, you know, you can be like, you know, we're teammates trying to achieve a goal, but really we're a single body. And the significance of that shows up, I think, in times in hardship, because a lot of times injuries happen, of course, in football. When I saw my teammates get hurt, I felt bad. It definitely affected the team outcome. But at the end of the day, the recovery and the rehab was on the injured person. You see what I mean? But when I had an injury to myself, to my own body, the ownership of the rehab process was squarely on me. And so I think that when we see things that are happening that believers have a part in that's hurting God's plan, we have to understand that that is not somebody else's thing that we can hopefully be a part of making better. That's literally us participating in our own walk, that it will sovereignly somehow intersect with wherever God has the next move for us in our life. You guys feel me? So nothing major has been on my mind the last week. Just chewing on a few things.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, I where do we start? Again, our context is not like, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, talking about this on this whole, like, big kind of political or, you know, I don't know, just the, fixing the whole social thing. We're talking about Christians mainly, you know, primarily, because here we are, we're in Christ. And you mentioned a couple things, so I'm going to pull up what I wrote down. What would you want? How do I say this? You know, we talk about trying to esteem people better. What we're really talking about is, can we just even be equal? There's a lot of people who are like, I don't feel like I've ever not been equal with people. That's a hard thing for a lot of people. I know a lot of guys struggling with the idea of privilege, just that concept. Could you speak to that some?
Yeah, I think it's hard because it's a new concept. You know, even for myself, honestly, understanding it's been that way since I was, you know, before I can remember knowing that or thinking that that was true. Having people just reach out to me in the last week or two and being like, man, I'm sorry, I'm gonna learn everything I can. Just like, so you just now realize that things were not equal. You know, so there's this whole awakening process of like, shoot, maybe there is something that is a thing that I wasn't even, I'm just in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't see the boundaries of it, so I've just been in it the mm-hmm. whole time. And so I think it's a real struggle, first of all, to articulate. I was thinking about this earlier today, is, you know, like I just said, it's easy to say systems change when the beliefs of the individuals change. Mm-hmm. But how do you know your beliefs? Right. Like, you can meditate as hard as you can, like, on any given subject, but really it's a moment of friction once you hit the point. I heard somebody say it just this afternoon. It's like the troubled mind. I'm gonna butcher it. I'll get it to you guys later. But it's something about when you have this like dissonance, mm-hmm. it's not making sense for you. Mm-hmm. It's really this disconnect between maybe feelings you don't have words for yet, mm-hmm. But information that you just received. Mm-hmm. And so it's really gonna be a learning process, mm-hmm. I think. And so there's no quick answer to mm-hmm. understanding privilege and you know, understanding what we have to play against yet. Right. But I think the first part is just agreeing that we're all going to actually try to walk this way first.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because this is where, I mean, it's like, it's a struggle, because if we think scripturally, just as a Christian, we believe that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Maybe a better way of saying that is that all are sinning. Like, we're all guilty. So systems are broken because people are broken. And the best we can do is keep working, like in this world, the best we can do is keep working to just make it a little better for the next generation, a little bit better for them. But it's almost like I've struggled with this thing of like people feeling like conflicted between their citizenship and their heavenly citizenship. When this is our moment to be like, we're first and foremost citizens of God's kingdom. And anyone that's broken and hurting, we should be rushing towards. I mean, it's, you know, you know injuries more than I do. I'm a lover, not a fighter. You were the He was a fighter. So. You know, I mean, like, it's like our bodies were made. When we get hurt, every part of our body rushes to help that part of the body. And you think, like, this is our shining moment to not just be American. And there's nothing wrong with being American. But it's our moment to be like, I am God's child first and foremost. And I see the conflict for a lot of people.
I think what that makes me think of is just our perspective of really what we consider ourselves a part of.
Yeah.
You know, so the conflict in those two realms for me is I have to see myself spiritually as a part of this body that is depending on me to function.
Right.
You know, if any particular part of my body shuts down, that changes a lot of decisions that I had to make about the things that are on my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's my foot, my kidney, my shoulder, you know, my courses of action are going to edit themselves. And so, but if I'm just thinking about, you know, if my foot was just thinking, I'm just going to be the best left foot possible, mm-hmm. you know, with no regard for the rest of what else it's a part of, mm-hmm. that's obviously going to lead to breakdowns. And right. I think that's kind of when we take ourselves out of spiritual perspectives too far and it doesn't guide, you know, those like deepest commitments and those deepest, you know, rhythms and those deepest just senses mm-hmm. and those awarenesses,
right.
then we're just bound to worry about low stuff. We're not little right. stuff like life's not important, but I mean stuff that doesn't have that interconnected ripple effect right. that we were created to have.
Yeah, and I mean, so how do people? What's a healthy way for? Because right now all these conversations are going to be happening awkward. You know, when I called Nick to, you know, seeing so many pastors doing this, like they're grabbing their one black friend to have this conversation with, you know? And I thought, man, I don't want to do that. And then I thought, I don't want to not do that. Like, I don't want to miss out on an opportunity for us to get to grow. Because if there's anything we know about our, like, the Bible says that we're going to, like, be learning about the grace of God for eternity. So heaven is a place where we keep growing. That means earth is a place where we're supposed to keep growing. I'm not supposed to reach a level where I'm like, oh, I got it, I'm good. I think that's why we're in the situation we're in. A group of people got to the place where they're like, we're good. And then everybody that wanted to get to there got to there just to sustain that same thing. It's just gone over and over. So we had this conversation like, Nick, I don't want that to be the thing, but I don't want it to not be. How would you help people to navigate conversations right now? They maybe aren't going to happen on this level, yeah, but sure. how do you help people who are like trying to, they're like, I'm trying, what? How do I do this?
Yeah. That's good, man. How to navigate these conversations. I say, because we're in uncharted territory, I think,
yeah.
Where we're kind of like, I feel like the whole nation was just standing in front of a jack-in-the-box that finally popped up, and we're like, oh, snap. You know, so
yeah.
I think just this is not the moment to know everything.
Right.
You know, this is not the moment to think you're the history expert. Mm. This is not the moment to think that you know what pain is, but that person doesn't. And that, I mean, both sides mm-hmm. or whoever. This is not the moment to, this is the moment, like you said, to be listening, eyes open, ears open, heart open. Because I think that like I was saying in the beginning, hoping that God will bring the right voices at the right times, mm-hmm. us posturing ourselves to be able to hear, mm-hmm. and then in our own internal work, respond accordingly. Mm. So I think that the listening posture was what it seems like to me right now. Because all the things that I talked about in the beginning, I did not sit down and try to come up with like, oh, what am I going to say? Mm-hmm. These are literally just over the course of 7, 8, 9 days, different conversations with friends, different times sitting alone, you know, it just seems like God is putting together this, this rebuilding plan, at least in this specific area. But every rebuilding plan parallels what he's trying to do in us. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So.
Yeah, and it's almost, and you know, we talked about this before too, of like, these moments are going to make us all better.
Yeah.
So this isn't like just revealing that something's broken. It's also revealing like there's hope because I want to have relationships that are better. I want to see something that could be better. It's not just that, you know, so right now there's anger, a lot of anger, But the hope is that it's going to then become, how do we work towards healing and towards wholeness? So somebody sent in a question on this, Have you ever dealt with anger towards God for the existence of racism? I think they're talking to you.
Yeah, personally, no. Yeah. No, I'll answer for Phil. No. No, I never have, because even my wife just today was asking, have you had any personal experiences with, you know, discrimination? And I said, nothing major, but there was one that popped in my head from when I was little. I was probably 7 to 9 years old, and I was in the store with my brother. And it's a store kind of like Fry's, like an electronic place. And I remember we walked in, and there's like, you know, the double doors automatic, and we went to the first aisle right next to the double doors. And my brother's 10 years older than I am, and so he's doing his teenage thing. And I was just messing around with stuff on the shelves and putting it up, you know, taking it off, putting it back, trying to make him laugh probably. And we stayed there for, I remember it was a good amount of time, maybe 10, 20 minutes of him trying to pick. He didn't end up choosing anything. And so, you know, we went from that aisle straight and tried to walk back out the door, but we got stopped. And the, you know, this dude ran up like, hey, you know, like, what are you guys doing? And I just remember looking at my brother and seeing him get agitated because, you know, this 18, 19-year-old black male has seen these types of questioning processes before by this point. And so he knew what was happening, but I didn't. And they ended up ushering us in the back, and they were showing us, you know, video recordings of me messing with stuff on the shelves and being, you know, basically accusing us of shoplifting. And I only told that story to Phil just to to be like, yo, I didn't realize till after I even told that story that the name of that store was American. The name of that store was American. And I was like, whoa, the only story in my life that I can think of is American. So I don't get anger, but like I said, you just have to see what's there. It's just one of those things, like the difference between a traveler and a tourist. You know, like a tourist, they go to see all the sights, but a traveler just goes and sees what's actually there. I think that this is the moment to just be like, call it what it is, so we can move on.
Yeah, we call this in intercultural language, we say like there's tourists and there's sojourners. There's people who choose to, I'm here and I want to learn. Tourists just want to get pictures, eat exotic food, but the sojourner is like, I want to engage in this. And I think that a lot of our, and of course, like everything we're talking about has components in every, we could take this into so many different contexts of human life. This is the moment for this conversation on race issues, right? But this applies, you know, we've talked about this, this applies on so many levels. But so we're trying to learn how to navigate relationships, not as tourists. You know, oh, you know, I don't really have any black friends, so when I do, it's like I'm more of a tourist. Mm-hmm. But to have these conversations where I'm like, no, wait, I'm going to dive in a little bit. And it's working the other way as well, right? So in your Christian faith, like as a Christian, is it confusing? Are you able to separate between the issues of that we see in, you know, your story, the store American, mm-hmm. versus the kingdom of God? Or how much like, or because I've never had to like be conflicted on that level when it comes to my existence.
Sure. And
meaning, yeah, maybe seeing like, you know, do you see that same racism in the church? Do you see it, you know, like, oh, I see it out in the world, I see it's a problem, but I'm so thankful for the kingdom of God and the Christians, sure. You know. Does that make sense?
Well, there's people in the church too now. I mean, we are the church.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
It was an NFL coach that got in trouble because he said in a quote, you know, I wish the world was like an NFL locker room because there's no racism in the locker room. And everybody was like, excuse me, sir? And he's a middle-aged white dude.
He's
a middle-aged white dude talking about there's no racism.
Yeah.
You know, and this whole locker room is full of 90% black dudes.
Right.
So, but it's, anyway, so I think we're people.
Yeah.
You know, we're people. And for example, if you talk about women in church,
right,
you're digging up a whole nother conversation of injustice, discrimination. So those travesties that we create as humans are not unique to black people.
Right.
My aunt lives in Minnesota. She's Native American. We wouldn't be having this discussion. Whatever our struggle you just add more time to it. You know what I'm saying? So I think that that's, like you said, why it applies in so many ways, because no matter your color, your experience, your upbringing, those are the moments we can listen. Like, where can I relate to what it feels like to not be treated fairly just based on that other person's assumptions? You see what I mean? So those are the things that actually connect us, is our pain, our ability to feel the same pain regardless of what brought it on. That's where we can actually become closer.
I think of that verse where Paul said, comfort others with the comfort with which you've been comforted with by God. It's almost like every one of us has pain. No one race owns pain, right? We all experience pain. And it's almost like if I can harness what I've experienced and then say, okay, Lord, how could this minister now? Because it's hard to, and I think, I love what you said earlier, Nick, like this is the moment, like we can't rush ahead to try to just get solutions right now, because there's too much hurt for so many people, and rightly so. So any solutions we come up with are going to be kind of pendulum of hurt. It's almost like the best solutions come from being made whole again, like the healing process. Comfort others with the comfort that you've received from God. And, you know, like Joy's reading, and I'm reading with her as she's telling me the book again. But one of my favorite books from about a year and a half ago was written by John Perkins. It's called One Blood. If you're a reader, you should get it. It's called One Blood, John Perkins. There's my recommendation. And he really emphasizes the idea of letting church be as intentionally diverse as the people that are there. And, you know, these are the moments when we're like, we have to, it's not about, you know, and maybe you could speak to this. It's almost like people feel like, oh, now we're just trying to be politically correct. Yeah. I've never tried to be politically correct in my life, in the sense of like, I've never been driven by the political mindset. But being thoughtful to human beings is not a political correctness. So Jesus spoke about this way before that term political correctness.
Yeah, that's good.
How do we be that without, like, how do we combat that thought process?
I think obviously a big conversation, but I think that it just goes with seeing, I think it's an empathy thing, honestly. One thing I was thinking about is if you're having trouble or somebody's having trouble just feeling, because sometimes I'm not the most empathetic guy, like I can see it and know it's bad, but it doesn't eat me up,
right?
You know?
Right.
And so I was thinking, okay, what if I was to read one of these articles of one of these tragedies and substitute the names for me and my family?
Wow.
And see, and read it again and really try to let it sink in. You know, Nick Roach was, his neck was knelt on today for 8 minutes. He passed away from asphyxiation. He was survived by Anna Marie, Alexandria, Gideon, Olivia, Victoria, you know, like, if that doesn't do something to you and you really try to absorb what's happening out here and you're still concerned about whether you can say black or African American, or, you know, it's like we are just trying to be exactly what we're created to be. You know, the children, the literal family members that God put here. So that in each of the individual promises that he has for our lives, the entire picture will work perfectly. Really the opposite, you know, of the things that we tend to create on our own.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Crossing Cultures. Next week, we will do part 2 of In God We Trust, and that'll be the last episode of season 1 of the Crossing Cultures podcast.
Thank you for listening to Crossing Cultures. If you found value in the show, do us a favor and leave a review on iTunes or simply share the episode with a friend. And make sure to hit subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. If you'd like to connect with us, you can follow us on Instagram @crossing.cultures or by emailing us.